course, I start by thanking the organizers and particularly Ruth, Ahmed, and Papa for organizing the event and inviting me to attend today. No PowerPoint, just me. Pedro and I were discussing yesterday when we first met. We don't recall the specific instance, but recall it was around 2001. Since then, we've worked together on many projects. I can say with some confidence that it was Pedro Rafa who first remarked to me in the early 2000s that developing countries would, in the not-distant future, change their perspective on the TRIPS agreement, at least in a little bit, and begin to see it as a protective device or mechanism, as opposed only to the negative effects of requiring particular substantive standards. And Pedro's view with all the discussion we have now about preserving TRIPS flexibilities is, I would say, conventional wisdom. Pedro has always been insistent upon objective analysis of IP issues under the auspices of ICTSD, initiating studies on the economic effects of the TRIPS agreement and FDAs on access to medicines and pricing in various Latin American countries. As UN climate change negotiations began to move forward and demand started to appear for modifications of the TRIPS agreement to encourage technology transfer, Pedro was insistent that we put the horse before the cart and first try to analyze whether, in fact, TRIPS agreement rules and various forms of intellectual property were going to constitute an impediment to transfer of technology in the climate change arena, because if they weren't, he suggested, and developing countries would always have a limited amount of capital to expend, whether it might be better to expend their capital elsewhere. It's Pedro's balanced approach to critical issues, I think, which has made him so well regarded here in Geneva, and of course the fact that he's a fun person to be around doesn't hurt either. Intellectual property is a policy instrument that's used to accomplish particular objectives. Whether you think IP and policy and government are succeeding may well depend on how you define the objectives. If we define the optimum public health policy in terms of universal health coverage, or more narrowly in terms of universal access to medicine, accompanied by patient-centric technological innovation, we may well conclude that patent policy and its governance are failing. Public health budgets throughout the world are strained beyond capacity. New medicines are priced to extract the largest possible payments from patients. Investments are foregone where innovation will not yield significant profits. The industry is engaged in myriad uses involving promotion of pharmaceutical products, and there remain critical gaps in the development of new treatments. Well, what accounts for this failure of governance? Universal health coverage can be understood either as a public good or a human right. In either case, it's certainly something that citizens of a country or citizens of the global community can expect their governments to provide. And the patent system essentially privatizes the provision of medicine. That is, it privatizes the provision of this important public good. And there is, to be clear, nothing inherently wrong with private contracting to achieve public aims. However, if that approach is used, there is an essential corollary, that is effective government control or regulation. And this is where the present arrangements are failing. The problem is not the rise of the regulatory state, as intimated in the title of our program. The problem, instead, is the capture of the regulatory state, or at least substantial parts of it, by the regulator. Of course, there remain some resistance points, particularly constitutionally protected judges and independent prosecutors, but this resistance is largely defensive, a matter I will revert to. And the problem of regulatory capture is not limited to high-income countries, where the major subjects of regulation are located. The capture has taken place or is taking place in countries around the world. The pernicious role of heavily funded corporate lobbying of legislatures and executive officials, often through lawyers like many of us, is on display nearly everywhere. At the international governance level, this is not a new phenomenon. My colleague Susan Sell has documented this with great effect. It's not a novel discovery or observation. We're regrettably pointing to a systemic feature of global governance. You may discount from the novelty factor, but the fact that regulatory capture plays a tremendous role in international IT and health governance is too important to leave out of today's dialogue, and it goes a long way toward explaining the failures of the international patent system in respect to public health. The international community needs new financial and legal mechanisms for the development of medicines and their distribution. Alternatively, we need to dramatically reform the way the current system is regulated, but new funding mechanisms and systemic reform are fought at virtually every stage. It is a never-ending story. In the absence of systemic reform, we are left with a world of second-best solutions, essentially rear-guard defenses against private sector excess. And even these defensive measures require the exercise of governmental authority. We depend on the independence of judges and prosecutors and must continuously guard and protect this independence. The use of competition law to constrain abuses of market dominance through excessive pricing, patent and regulatory abuse, and collusive undertakings is taking on an increasingly important role in these defensive mechanisms. And this is where much of my own work has been devoted across the past several years, particularly for UNDP, and particularly trying to improve the ability to address issues regarding excessive pricing. And I note that just 2 days ago, the South African Competition Commission initiated a major investigation into excessive pricing in the South African cancer drug market. The European Commission has just initiated excessive pricing action. The British Competition Authority recently levied substantial fines against Pfizer and others for excessive pricing. And the European Commission, of course, undertook a detailed study of excessive and abusive practices in the pharmaceutical sector a number of years ago. But I think that this role of competition is becoming increasingly important, and it's potentially one of the most effective rearguard mechanisms. Perhaps not surprisingly, the increasing aggressiveness of emerging market competition authorities in addressing abusive practices is suddenly met with ideas from the major multinational lobbying groups. Well, maybe we need more rules about competition law, something they've been adamantly resisting for the past 30 years, but now that the rules are actually being used, it seems like there may be some efforts to cut back on this, and I would suggest that this is something that should be guarded against. Of course, also in the rear guard actions, we're very familiar with the use of TRIPS flexibilities. We had a great deal of discussion about that in the context of UN high-level panel on access to medicine, a number of recommendations regarding flexibilities, particularly noting the difficulty that governments have. You know, it's a persistent problem when you go to use flexibility. The sovereignty and power of your government is challenged. It can be very difficult to use. And the high-level panel made a number of recommendations in this regard, to which I would refer you. Of course, one of the main recommendations of the high-level panel, which I think is exceedingly important, is on the subject matter of transparency. I'll call it deep transparency. One of the major benefits we could get is detailed disclosure, for example, in the pharmaceutical industry about the actual R&D costs of producing new medicines so that we could take a close look at risk-adjusted costs and try to assess pricing issues better. Finally, a few words about two recent decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court, the most important one on May 3rd of 2017 in Impression Products v. Lexmark International, in which the Supreme Court adopted or reaffirmed a doctrine of international exhaustion of patents for the United States, reversing a very unfortunate precedent of the Federal Circuit, the Jazz Photo decision in 2001. And I expect everyone in this room is very familiar with the question of exhaustion. In fact, without doubt, we could spend all day on the issue, probably a week, going through its detailed history. Keith Mathis has done a number of economic studies in this area. But in Impression Products, the Supreme Court placed a sharp limit on downstream control by patent owners.
esto.
It held that a patent gives its right owner the right only to place the good on the market for sale somewhere in the world. There is no possibility to bring an infringement action based on the patent once the good has first been placed on the market. The court emphasized that the patent owner does not have a right to obtain any particular price, particularly a price based on geography. The patent owner decides where to place its good on the market and at what price, and that is the maximum extent of its control. The court strongly based its decision on the common law on an antipathy toward restraints on alienation. It's a very pro-development policy and decision. International exhaustion is fundamentally pro-competitive, fundamentally directed toward the opening of markets. And since developing country and emerging market manufacturers are today able to provide substitute, innovative, high-quality products, the prospects that multinational enterprise will be able to raise prices in developing markets with impunity is really no longer with us. So it's a very important decision. The U.S. domestic market is now open to parallel imports. Patents cannot be used to block. It's a much more complex matter than that because you get into the subject of FDA regulation. But even with current FDA regulations, if a good is manufactured outside the United States in an FDA-approved and inspected facility and the good is registered for marketing in the United States, we can already have parallel imports. I'm very much hopeful that major retailers like Costco and Walmart will look at this as an opportunity to begin to press down prices in the United States. Max asked me just to say one or two additional words about another decision that came down just 2 days ago, the Sandoz and Amgen decision. This was another decision in which the Supreme Court overturned the decision of the Federal Circuit. The Federal Circuit had decided to grant an additional 6 months exclusivity to biologic products worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The Supreme Court said that the Federal Circuit had misinterpreted the relevant statute and cut back on that extension. It's a less important decision than impression products because it's based on statutory language. Impression products is based on fundamental principles of the common law, and more important in that regard. These decisions, though, highlight the critical role of a constitutionally protected independent judiciary in looking after the field of IP governance. These decisions don't really represent systemic reform of the way medicines are developed or distributed. They're second best alternatives, but nevertheless, important to promote and preserve. So with that, I conclude. It's a great pleasure to be here and to honor my long-term colleague for the lobby on such great work, and I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Fred.